and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
There we go. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, vegetarians. I'm trying to hang in, man, and I'm having a hard time because I went out. How are you, Mark Riley?
I'm doing good, man. Where'd you go out to?
Oh, dude, I opened this mic right when I'm sitting here before we go on thinking like I'm done. It's over. I can't even wake up. What's wrong with my head? My wife came in at 11 at night, the middle of the night. You know, for me, it's the middle of the night. So I slept for like 2 hours, woke up, let her in, got her all packed, unpacked and stuff. You know, in the middle of the night, Riley, went out yesterday, bought her all the things she likes, made her some tuna fish, got some cold cuts, some Genoa salami, some provolone cheese.
Man.
Yeah, got her some sliced turkey, and I'm looking at that meat, boy. I'm looking at it. I'm smelling it. My cats are excited. I'm trying to hold myself back. The cats are all freaked out. I woke up this morning, of course, you know, my wife is doing her signature messes all over the house, which is good. It's nice to have that going on.
A woman's touch.
Yeah, yeah. The antithesis of a woman's touch is what my wife brings to the domestic situation. But I love her, and I'm happy to see her. It's great. Now, the meat thing, are we going to really get into that? You know what's weirder is that, here's, you know, I'm a little bit on the OCD side. You know that about me? A little bit. Not as much as Dan Pashman, son of Louis and Linda Pashman. Yeah, I'm not meticulously making raps all night, you know.
That's a large barometer.
Yeah, it sure is.
The things he freaks out over. You remember the day that he came in and he had put a wrap in the... He put one of his wrap sandwiches in the fridge and it froze?
Yeah. Well, he freaked.
I thought that day was lost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What's wrong with the temperature in the freezer? Look at it. It froze.
Oh, my God. The lettuce was frozen. It was over.
He sent out an all email to Air America.
He did not.
How dare you put the temperature up in Morning Sedition's refrigerator?
Yeah, right.
The wrap crisis.
Yeah, sure was.
And we're thinking about the big things at Air America here. We're trying to change the world, but you start with the fridge. You know what I mean? You got to start small.
Yeah.
Think locally, act globally. Isn't that how, or is it act locally, think globally? Hey, you know, whatever it is, it's a good idea. So where was I going with this before? Here's the
meat. The meat. You want to go back to the meat?
Just a little. Just a taste, man. Can I get a taste?
Look, I haven't eaten red meat in over a decade. And I still, when I'm at a barbecue or when I go past someplace where they're making some decent burgers, or you go into a steakhouse, you're ordering seafood, you still have that Jones every now and then for the red meat.
I just, like, you know what? I'm eating soy ice cream last night, Mark.
Well, that's different. I don't go that far.
And then somebody told me that too much soy, it raises the estrogen levels. I literally have, my trainer says,
uh-oh,
be careful on the soy.
That makes a lot of sense.
Wait a minute.
What does that mean?
No, see, that's wrong.
What does that mean?
Chris, that's wrong, man.
Yeah.
Kayla. That's a low blow.
Kayla.
What?
Do I look fat?
No, look at my ass.
Do I look
fat?
Good,
man.
Huh?
You look good.
All right, no. My trainer said,
nice
be careful. But do you think I'd make a good woman? That's all I'm trying to find out.
You actually do. You actually make a great woman.
No, I wouldn't. What does that mean? Really? Do I have the cheekbones for it? Tomorrow I'm wearing lipstick and mascara. You know what? I want to be part of the transgender community or the transsexual community just for a day. Can you be transvestite for a day? Huh? Nothing. I get nothing? That's it? I got a room full of baffled men in here. Like, what's going on? All right, the vegetarian thing, we went with you on that, but now it's getting weird. Now you're taking us down a strange tunnel. We don't really want to know this much about you. Tomorrow I'm wearing a dress.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it'll be lost. You know what I mean? It'd be lost to the viewers or to the listeners.
Well, wait a minute. How much soy have you been doing? How much estrogen do you have charging through your system?
Well, you see these? That's a
cheap I wonder what that bustier was. That's okay.
No, that's what someone told me.
This is New York, all right?
I've been eating a lot of soy. This is New York. I just got to go to different places.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't been eating a lot. I think what I'm doing is I'm looking for reasons in my head to reintegrate some meat. Because, you know, I never ate chicken. You know, I don't eat much of that. It's just once or twice a day. You know, I'm just getting tired of the fish. And then I got people writing me saying that it actually costs, it's actually worse to be a vegetarian because the amount of fuel it takes to ship pineapples from other places than if you just buy your meat locally.
From where? I mean, how many places do they grow pineapples?
Exactly, though. Exactly. And I'm not even eating pineapples. It's the whole idea is lost on me. But he basically, his point is, if he, and I got two emails like this saying, if that you buy meat that's organic and local, you know, how bad is it really? You know, outside of the horrendous pain that the cow goes through. But there are places where you can get meat where they literally, I think that they actually, they gently asphyxiate. I've talked about this before, where they gently asphyxiate the cow with a silk scarf at the peak moment of orgasm.
Oh.
So that the meat... Now, I mean, it costs a little more, but that kind of stuff is worth it.
Yeah, right.
Am I right? I mean, this is like free-range chicken. They have actual communist chickens and socialist chickens and chickens that not only live freely, but some are encouraged to do art and stuff.
I know, but what? It's too labor-intensive.
And those
all those stranglers.
Guess,
what are you going to find?
That's right. You're still at the, yeah, exactly. Well, it's an ancient
I know.
Discipline. So now that we've talked about all that important stuff, I am happy. I think that having my wife here, this will be an interesting experiment because she's going to be here for like a month. So we'll see how it changes me or it affects me, you know?
Well, I mean, when is she coming in?
What do you guys do? Now, you go to bed, and what does your wife do when you go to bed?
She goes on the computer, and I have no idea after that because I'm asleep.
I'm done. I woke up today. My wife was just barely falling asleep. She was still up. She was watching the
show. Well, yeah, because you got her whole time change thing she's got to get accustomed to. She's flown across country. There's a little, some modicum of adrenaline it takes to, you know,
yeah,
go through the plane landings and stuff.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm curious. I'm
now, I don't. Well, do you think she'll be crashed by the time you get home?
My wife? Oh,
yeah.
And she'll sleep through anything. That I can always count on. Yeah. If the house was burning, it would be.
Well, I mean, again, you're in Astoria, Queens, where they got people drilling the sidewalks in the middle of the day. You got all of that. You got construction up the wazoo.
That's
you
know what Queens is known for.
Absolutely.
If you look at most of the books,
that's right.
It says Astoria, Queens, construction
and garbage collection.
Put of jackhammers everywhere.
But you know what? They are, the apartment where the woman died? Next door,
they're redoing that.
They turned it around. My landlord, he put a dentist office in the basement, you know, in the first floor. He's going to put new buzzers in. He's just gutted that apartment next door, and I'm going to tell the cardinal about it. He might move, try and get him next door. That'll be interesting.
Oh, that would be interesting. But you know what's going to happen? He's going to raise your rent now.
It's all right, but it's still cheaper for a guy who's been living in New York for the last 2 years. It's a two bedroom with a kitchen.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's going to be, you know, even at what he's asking, it's going to be a lot cheaper than you could live in New York City for.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
But the one thing is, they're building one of those. When was the last time you were in Astoria? Either of you.
Last time I dropped you off.
Well, you know, when the sun comes out, all right, it becomes like, you know, it becomes a Greek village there. It becomes a sort of Euro village where there's a cafe society, you know, in Queens, where all the Greeks from all over the place, they all take on, you know, they sit outside in the cafes. And right across the street, there was a restaurant from me right outside of my window that went out of business. And I got a scary feeling it's going to become one of these, you know, mad outdoor cafes within a month. And these guys that drive around these cafes, they're always driving around these sort of, you know, rebuilt vets and, you know, big, you know, cars. There's a whole single scene going on. They're on those, what are those little motorcycles called? The bullets?
Okay.
No, the rocket cycles. They look like little rockets.
Racers.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, they're not even Vespas. They're really fast, and they have a big show going on. I'm scared. I'm going to have to get... Do they make windows that are really soundproof?
Well,
like, can I insulate myself into it?
You could do the double bay... you know, where they actually have two, they have a little
double pane.
Yeah, double panes, but those are expensive.
I don't care, man. I got to sleep. I'm just panicking. I just don't want to hear strange, exotic, you know, Greek music at all hours. Not that it bothers me. I mean, they're free to rejoice in their.
Well, you do that now, regardless of what they do with that empty space.
Yeah, but no, but in the back room, I've got the Ukrainian party going on. There's that bar. You know, I'm surrounded by interesting rhythms. You know,
well, hey, you know, you're a man of the world.
And
you're
I know,
Mark Maron.
That's right. There you go. Okay, and we're going to come back and talk about Bill Clinton took a shot at Katie Couric. It was beautiful, and we got that and a lot more stuff. 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
I'm Reverend Al Sharpton, and you're listening to Morning Sedition. Talk about the issues we're fighting for our lives here on Air America Radio.
The Mantis Tiller Cultivator. Put the fun back in gardening. Call now 1-800-211-8001. That's 1-800-211-8001.
19 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Remind me, Chris, to bring in some more AC/DC CDs so we can do some more. What do you call those, liners?
Or bumper music, sure.
Ah, bumper music, yes. Because I brought all my CDs here, and I love AC/DC, the early stuff. You know, I just want to say one more thing. I'm reading this article in the New York Times Magazine from Sunday about, you know, how much advertising has an effect on us and how they're going to get rid of the Nielsen ratings and use this other rating system to find out what's really effective. And I'll tell you something. I don't know whether or not it makes you buy stuff or not, but I woke up, as I said, my wife had made a sandwich in the night, so my mayonnaise was in the wrong place, which is what is getting off on the OCD thing. There was a mayonnaise sitting on the top shelf. It belongs on the door, right? Okay. So it's best food. It's best food mayonnaise. All right.
Okay.
Fine. No problem. Right. I shut the door and I'm making breakfast. And you know, about an hour later, I'm sitting there. Bring out the best food and bring out the best. I'm like, where did that come from? Something like that. You know, it's the
Wait
best.
Wait a minute. No, that was Hellman's.
Ah. Oh. Thank God.
Let's bring out the helmet.
I guess what I'm telling you then is advertising doesn't work. You understand? Unless you, because I just, but it's still weird. It was mayonnaise.
But you know, there was a time, long time ago, but there was a time when there was a mayonnaise that was called one thing on the East Coast and best food, I think, on the West Coast.
Oh, that must have been why I was stupid. So it's bring out the helmets and bring out the best.
That's the one.
So I just threw best food in there because that's what I had. I got to get some Hellman's. I got to get some Hellman's mayonnaise. Is that what you use, Pashman?
Seriously, is there any other kind of mayonnaise?
It's best food mayonnaise.
It's Kraft. I mean, Kraft tries.
What do you mean, what is best food?
You get that at like the 99 cent store? Is that like the 99 cent store?
That's mayonnaise?
That's the mayonnaise without the egg.
Astoria is full of 99 cent store. Is this a rule now? We got
Pashman
is barreling into the studio.
I will never listen to anything you have to say about food again, my friend. I'm sorry.
What?
There is Hellman's mayonnaise, and there is crap.
But let me explain to you something. I'm not a big mayonnaise guy. I put it in tuna fish. That's really it. I don't put it on sandwiches. I don't put it on anything. I really don't use mayonnaise, so it's not. I don't have that.
Hellman's is known as best foods west of the Rockies.
Stop. So get out.
I don't care.
Get out. Same company. Get out.
Hellman's. It's got to be Hellman's.
Same company.
I don't care.
It's the same stuff.
A lot of things are made by the same company.
Hey, I was right.
Equal quality.
Dude, they're just changing the label.
That's all it is. Yeah, it is. It's the same mayonnaise.
Oh, look, he's all broken and weird. It's weird when you commit to a piece of artwork, isn't it? When you commit to a symbol, a logo, and it's justifying how you perceive taste.
I'll bet you
you're a pawn.
What? I bet you use Heinz ketchup, don't you?
Oh.
No. Heinz ketchup. Heinz. I understand that. I grew up a child in America.
All right.
You know? Who the hell uses Heinz ketchup?
Who the hell heard of best foods?
And what now, a few words
he
from our sponsor.
He said it's best foods west of the Rockies. Last time I checked, we're east of the Rockies.
I knew that they called it one thing one place and one thing someplace else. They do that. They used to do that sometimes. It's for marketing purposes. That's all.
I don't understand, man. I mean, look, if it's true that it's the exact same mayonnaise, I'll cut you a little bit of slack. But you should still go with the one that says Hellman's on the container just to be sure.
You know what's really gross, though?
What?
You ever tried homemade mayonnaise?
Nasty.
Ooh.
It's nasty. And you would think it'd be better, right? Because you're an integrity guy, authenticity guy. You would think that if you just, you know, took a cupful of canola oil, dropped an egg in there and blended it until it got thick, that would be tastier than the kind you could buy off the shelf.
Huh. Doesn't.
Not once you've had Hellman's, you wouldn't think that.
Tastes like chicken.
Oh my God, they're going to think we're on the, you know, we're on the Hellman's hip here. You know, that we're really selling Hellman's. You know, the thing was, okay, maybe I did buy it at the 99 cent store. I don't know, maybe that's why. Because it's a little jar. I know I got it at the deli because you don't know where the hell that stuff comes from. Sometimes you go to deli.
You do if it says Hellman's on the container.
Oh.
It's best food. It's the same company. It's the same stuff. I'll prove it to you. We're going to send it to the lab. To the morning.
We are not east of the. We are not west of the Mississippi, my friend.
But sometimes you don't know how the without sourcing that you know what kind, you know, where anything's
right.
Coming from anymore.
It could have come from India.
I mean, you know, but I understand what you're saying. It was an interesting sentiment, but it's same brand.
Can I tell you something, my friend?
What? My friend.
My friend.
Zabar's Whitefish Salad, which everyone in New York knows all too well, and out there, you know, we hear the morning show live for Zabar's Whitefish Salad, and I bring it in sometimes.
It's excellent.
If you read the ingredients on a container of Zabar's homemade whitefish salad, it says whitefish, celery, Hellman's mayonnaise.
Oh, so that's where you got it. You've been influenced.
No. Yeah. I knew about Hellman's way before I started liking white fish salad. But the point is that Zabar's makes that distinct
delineation. Okay, I understand what you're saying. I was more concerned. The point I was trying to make was a song, which I screwed up anyways.
Right.
And it turns out, you know, it stuck in my head, but it wasn't effective. So the point we were trying to make is I remember the jingle, but I don't remember the brand. So I don't know how effective advertising is. I'm with you on the Hellman's. You know, the Hellman's is fine, but I'm telling you, it's the same as Best Food. I'm just telling you, okay? I know it's hard to accept this, you know, but I'm just telling you that. And also, it's been great talking to you.
Had a 5-minute conversation about what?
Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise.
Well, I'm going to go do some more research.
Okay, you find out.
Yahtzee.
You find out.
I'll put together a fact sheet for you.
Sarah Ann is our researcher who puts together our fact sheets, and now she's wake her up.
Yeah.
Tell her this is important. That John Bolton can wait.
Bill
Clinton can wait. The relationship between India and China can wait. Do you understand? It can all wait until we find out the truth about Hellman's mayonnaise, Dan, and how we find out that you, my friend, are wrong and are a sucker for labels. That you are not as authentic and full of integrity as you think.
Oh. Why do you go buy more 99-cent mayonnaise?
Oh, Lord, here we go.
What's like $1.20? So what could have been at the 99-cent store? I'm not going to shop at the 99-cent store anyway. Yeah, because I go and I'm like, this is great. I get 25 Tupperware things for 99 cents, and then I get home and I'm always like, how come it doesn't work? And you can't bring stuff back.
Sale. No, you can't bring it back.
Not to the 99-cent store. No. They're like, throw it away.
Try to bring it back to your dealer. What, are you crazy?
You know, you bought it. No, the staples were good. The Chinese staples I got from the 99-cent store have really paid off. I'm very excited about that. And little did I know, I could have just stolen from here. It's like I haven't had a job, you know, where I worked in an office.
Can get swag like staples.
I didn't understand that was a general understanding that if you need something, take a pen or two or seven.
A
post-it note or 25 pads.
Yeah, why not?
Or, you know, two things of printer paper. I didn't do that, but I was thinking about it. I've been recycling. You know what? I have. I literally went out of my way to recycle at this place. I pulled stuff out that had one side open, and I took it home.
Really?
Yeah.
Very good.
And every time I use it, I think I'm doing something good. So I guess we're going to talk about Bill Clinton in the next segment. The mayonnaise thing couldn't wait.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got through that, though. And Dan will come back with the research later.
Let's hope.
So we'll talk about Clinton.
We'll talk about Clinton.
And the
we'll
John
talk
Bolton.
About Bolton.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Tom DeLay. We'll talk about all your favorites when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Talk. This is the smartest hour of radio on the dial. The Rachel Maddow Show starts tomorrow. Only on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I tell you that the mayonnaise discussion has generated a lot of action on the phones. But before we get to that, I haven't done this in a while. My name is Mark, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark!
And in Recovery Corner, I like to reach out to fellow 12-steppers who are struggling to stay clean and sober. As always, I'm offering my counsel to my temporary sponsee, George W. So, buddy, it's been a while since we talked, and since the election, I've had a tough time not drinking, so I haven't been there for you. But I read an article yesterday about your new iPod and the songs you listen to while you exercise. Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, I see a disturbing trend emerging. Here are some of the people you listen to. Stevie Ray Vaughan, Van Morrison, Eric Clapton. And what do you have in common with all of them? Booze. Lots of it. And then there's George Jones. Great singer, no question. But here's a guy that was once such a problem drinker that he drove his lawnmower to the liquor store because he was too drunk to walk. Sound familiar? Golf cart? Familiar? All right, people, places, and things, pal. But in this case, songs. You're turning your head into a bar. Don't become a regular. let me tell you something, GW. It's a short step from iPod to I drink. Big. Remember, bend your knees before you bend your elbows. Sorrow is looking back. Worry is looking forward. You got one sip in tomorrow and one sip in yesterday. You're peeing on today. God doesn't wake up and think he's you. Think. Don't drink. Get to a meeting. That's all I got to say. Now let's get to the bottom of the mayonnaise situation. Hey, look, those people out there who are chomping at the bit for topical stuff, news, what's going on in the world, I'm sorry. We're having fun today. Here we go. It's always fun. What am I talking about? Richard, what's on your mind? Help me out.
Richard. Hey, Richard.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
All right.
Good. I just want to let you know you're both right.
Oh, okay.
The jingle on the West Coast. I'm here in California driving to Reno right now, and it is best food west of the Rockies.
I grew up in Albuquerque, so that lets me off the hook, so I don't have to feel stupid.
Yeah, and it's Hellman's over there, because I've been all over the U.S., and I hear the same jingle back there, so can't believe I'm calling in on something so stupid, but, you know.
This is important stuff, Richard. Yeah, don't be ashamed of it.
Oh, I'm not. It's like they can get something else later.
Okay, thanks, Richard. Okay, buddy. Right, Sheldon Richard. In New Jersey. What's up, Sheldon?
Hey, Sheldon.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Let me put it to rest for you.
Okay.
Okay, I was electrical engineer for Best Food.
All right.
The manufacturing plant is in Bayonne, New Jersey, in the East Coast.
Uh-oh.
I designed the processes, okay?
Okay.
East of the Rockies is Hellman. West of the Rockies is Best Foods. It's the exact same ingredients. They just changed the label.
Okay, thank you for settling that and then making me understand and realize that Dan Pashman has been duped.
That's right.
Thank you.
And thanks for mentioning Bayonne, New Jersey.
I like Bayonne, New Jersey. Yeah,
me too.
Not for nothing, but Hellman is made in the home state of Lewis and Linda Pashman.
There you
Pashman.
Go. Yeah.
That is a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he should have known. Best food, same mayonnaise. Now, the real question we're going to have to answer another time is how did I get Best Foods in my refrigerator? Now, I grew up in Albuquerque, so, you know.
Lisa didn't bring it, did she?
No. And I felt bad. I felt a little shame and a little vulnerable because I sang the song and everyone was like, no, what are you talking about? But I sang the right song. And I'm going to sing it again. Bring out the best foods and bring out the best. Dan Pashman, it was wrong. All right.
And by the way, I'm sorry. Just a little thing here. It probably fell off the back of a truck. That's how you got the.
I don't know how it made its way. It probably did. I don't know what happened. I don't know how that happened.
Anyway,
Dan,
go on.
Well, hopefully we're going to have Lou Dobbs on, and he'll tell us how did I got Best Foods.
Smuggled across
east
the border.
The Rockies. But yeah. All right. So now let's talk about your guy, Arthur Finkelstein.
My guy, Arthur Finkelstein.
No, you knew about him.
Oh, yeah, I knew.
I didn't know about him. He's a New York guy. He used to be a D'Amato operative, right?
Well, see, the thing that people need to know about Arthur Finkelstein is that he's the reason we in New York have the governor that we have. Mario Cuomo was riding high in the early 1990s. Arthur Finkelstein, at the behest of Al D'Amato, former senator from here in New York, got behind a little-known state legislator by the name of George Pataki. Mm-hmm. Nobody thought he had a snowball's chance in hell in 1994 against Mario Cuomo, who had presidential aspirations. What happens? Pataki didn't just beat him. He waxed him. And Arthur Finkelstein was the reason why.
Now he's back. Now he's back getting married up in Massachusetts to his partner.
Yes, okay. To his partner of 40 years.
Okay, that's a nice long-standing
relationship.
Now he comes back, and now he's putting together a lot of organization and money. He's trying to get money together, and he's putting together an operation called Stop Her Now to stop Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah, and the bizarre part is he is actually aiming this at her run for re-election next year, and the Republicans don't even have a candidate yet. Pataki has said he's not running. Giuliani said he's not running. Those were the two people that everybody thought would make the best challenge against Hillary because they want to hobble her going into 2008.
So it must be personal, and I think that's what Bill Clinton was insinuating when he said this. Chris?
That was sad. I mean, there were two stories. One is that he went to Massachusetts and married his longtime male partner, and then he comes back here and announces this, which means I thought one of two things. Either this guy believes his party is not serious and is totally Machiavellian in its position. Or, you know, as David Brock said in his brave book, Blinded by the Right, there's some sort of self-loathing.
That's it. Bill Clinton doing a little off-the-cuff psychoanalysis, which isn't bad. I found myself thinking the same thing when I heard the story 2 days ago.
Yeah.
It didn't make sense to me. Then again, a lot of times gay Republicans don't quite make sense to me.
This raised a whole lot of dust here in New York, where people really were questioning whether or not Clinton crossed the line by bringing in Finkelstein's personal life. Now, of course, when you start looking at Clinton's personal life and the question of who brought his personal life into the public eye, that would be a really silly question. The other side of this, of course, is that Arthur Finkelstein has consistently... The guy worked for Jesse Stinkin' Helms.
Yeah.
Okay? These are not just Republicans, arch-conservative Republicans, the people who are behind trying to get a gay marriage amendment to the United States Constitution, and by inference, the same people we were talking about yesterday who said gays ought to be executed, homosexuals should be executed for being gay.
They're aligned with those Dominionist Christians, with the Reconstructivist Christians, with the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigades. This is what you call, it's, I think in the actual, the DSLR 1134, whatever that book is called, of diagnosis. This is psychological, I think it's called Roy Cohen Complex.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think that's what it's retitled. Bill Clinton also out and about on the media after spending a lot of time with Republicans. I guess he's actually been very present and very vocal about a lot of things, and he is responding to I guess it's the Today Show with Katie Kirk, that's what she's on, right? The Today Show. They were talking about how this whole assault on the judiciary by the conservatives, dragging, you know, letting the religious fanatics come in and make, you know, literally almost physical threats to judges is what he's calling a hoax in relation to his presidency.
Absolutely. Let's hear that one, Chris.
Right now it seems the most effective thing the Democrats are doing on Capitol Hill is blocking various nominations, at least from their perspective, like, you know, that John Bolton or a U.S. ambassador to the U.N. or head of the EPA or head of the FDA. How can the Democratic Party retool itself so they're not simply seen as obstructionists in terms of the president's agenda?
Well, first of all, I don't think that's fair. I don't think Mr. Negroponte will be blocked. I'm not sure Mr. Bolton will be blocked. There are policy reasons on the environment and food safety for debates on the others. And on judges, that's just a hoax. I mean, the Democrats blocked 10 out of over 200 judges. The Republicans wouldn't even give a vote to 40 of my Court of Appeals judges, four times as many, just on the Court of Appeals, never mind all the others that they wouldn't have voted. So this image that I'm sad to say, you know, you just perpetrated it. It's ridiculous. The Democratic Senate's been nowhere near as obstructionist to President Bush on judges as the Republican Senate was to me. Not even close.
There you go.
Yeah, ooh, that hurt.
Clinton took a couple pops. I think he's basically taken a couple of pops at the media for misrepresenting this thing, for never reporting the truth. And, you know, it's the audacity of these Republicans, people like Tom DeLay, who we're going to talk about later, who are saying that the media is spinning his situation in terms of you know, that he's really not guilty of anything, and that this is a mammoth, full-on scale, you know, attack, an organized by the
Tom.
Democrats. You know, and I hope he's right. I hope it is.
Look, one of the things that we, I think, can get from both of these pieces of sound that we played with Bill Clinton is that in the absence of a single Democratic figure who is going to take it to the Republicans, I guess Clinton's decided to do it himself.
Yeah.
I mean, in one instance, he is reacting very viscerally to what he sees as an attack on his wife, okay? The thing with Finkelstein was not so much about his being gay or about his marrying his partner. It's about the fact that he's trying to start an organization to stymie his wife.
Yeah,
That's a problem.
Stay away from my wife.
Yeah, essentially. That's what he's saying.
Maybe have to reckon with me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad he's back. I'm glad he's around. I'm glad he's doing some secret guiding.
But ask yourself this question.
Yes, I will ask.
All of the Democrats that have been talking about this judiciary thing, why do you think none of them have mentioned what he did?
Why is that?
That's why Bill Clinton is still important to the Democratic Party.
Well, I think also they're either on a policy level, not a policy level, but they've all agreed to let these guys start to bury themselves or not, or maybe they're still, you know, completely fragmented and disorganized. But Tom DeLay seems to think that there's just a tremendous organization and a huge thrust of Democratic thinking working against him.
He's not the only one. They're both full of, all of them are full of crap. But think about this. We mentioned the fact that it's only 10 out of 200 and some odd judges.
Yep.
But Clinton mentioned that there were 40 judges that the Republicans wouldn't let through when he was president.
Yep.
Now, somebody should have. We've got plenty of people in Congress who were there when Clinton was president. How come it was only Clinton that brought it up?
That's a good question. And it was only the Court of Appeals.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I don't understand why they're not speaking up. It doesn't make any sense to me. But let's talk. Let's get into the confirmation of John Bolton when we come back. There's a few fireworks in that.
We'll
listen to Carl Ford do his little piece on John Bolton. It's 45 past the hour. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
800-297-3019, 800-297-3019, that's 800-297-3019.
Forty-nine past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Fair America Radio's morning sedition program. There's a liberal agenda sound from the fax machine. It's coming to us from the Streisand compound. Please hear your marching orders for today. One, start preparing the anti-Hillary ads now. It's going to be a long race, people. 2004 was nothing. Two, if anyone remarks that Britney Spears is pregnant, cock your eyebrow disdainfully and say, "Who? Who's that? Britney who?" Three, for your book club, read aloud from Jane Fonda's My Life So Far, and have everyone dress up as their favorite Fonda. Aerobics Jane, Hanoi Jane, Mrs. Ted Turner, Clute Jane, Barbarella. Four, throw a kegger to support Anheuser-Busch's courageous stand against genetically modified rice. Or to denounce them. Either one works. Whatever you want, just throw a kegger. You know. Five, today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. So they busted three terrorists for plotting against our financial institutions. I got three more for you. Ken Lay, Tom DeLay, and Neil Bush. Wake up, sheeple. They're in your back seat right now. I swear to God, do I have to spend my entire life hating everyone named Bolton?
Let's see.
This guy, John Bolton, what a history he had. He's another one that started his political career during the Goldwater campaign.
During the Goldwater years, then he went to Yale. He was part of the Yale conservatives. He is, a devotee of Dick Cheney. And fellow traveler in terms of bullying the intelligence community. But what's interesting about John Bolton, Mark, is that he was and has served, actually still is, Under Secretary of State for Arms Control and International Security. Now, remember that the State Department's major role is diplomacy in foreign policy. That's what they do. I find it very interesting that I have yet to hear anything out of Colin Powell, the former Secretary of State, about what he thinks about John Bolton's nomination.
So you're saying their basic job is to go around the world going, come on, can we work this out? I think we can work this out. Not like, you guys are stupid.
Yeah, and see, Bolton was, as you just pointed out, the bull in the china shop.
Right.
Okay? John Bolton, and of course, you know, for his job has been trying to halt the proliferation of nuclear weapons and negotiate treaties. I don't know how well he did on the latter. But the bottom line is, in nominating him to be the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, the Bush administration is sending a very, very clear signal that the United States is not prepared to listen to brook any dissent to its agenda at the United Nations.
So you're saying that Bolton's attitude is the UN is a great organization. The only thing that ruins it is all those other countries.
All those other countries. And okay. Kofi Annan, by the way. I'm sure he's no... He says he's going to work with him, but I'm sure he's no big fan of his. And see, that's the other thing. That's the other side of this.
Yeah.
Bolton is going to be heard very loud, assuming he's confirmed. And, we're going to get into that, too. But if he is confirmed, he will make a very big noise as to who Kofi Annan's successor will be and be very clear that this person is going to have to be someone acceptable to the Bush administration. Doesn't matter what the other 180 countries in the UN think. If it's not acceptable to Bush, that person will not become the next Secretary General. I guarantee it.
You want to hear something really stupid that just went through my head? I'm thinking, judging by the way Bolton looks, it may be his successor will be Mr. Green Team. Mr. Green Jeans.
You're thinking of Officer Joe Bolton.
Because he looks like Captain Kirk.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry, I'm distracting from the issues.
Well, now, what happened yesterday was very interesting. Because a gentleman by the name of Carl Ford Jr., former chief at the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee about John Bolton. Now, when we look at Carl Ford. We need to be sure that when we say, now, he slammed Bolton, but this is not a radical, this is not an SDS, not a liberal. This is a conservative Republican former Army guy.
Who worked with Bolton.
Who worked with Bolton. And by the way, Ford is a devotee of Dick Cheney, too. So
right,
it's not like, you know, and a fierce proponent of Bush's policies.
Right.
So we're not talking about somebody who's got an axe to grind with the Bush administration. This isn't
right.
Richard Clark or somebody.
Right.
All right. This guy essentially had some really, really bad things to say about John Bolton. And let's hear the first one. And this is the one that's getting all the play in the papers.
He's a quintessential kiss up, kick down sort of guy.
Kiss up,
kick down.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. That means that, you know, he'll do anything to accommodate the powers above him, yet anyone under him, anyone who's in a lesser position, he'll beat on.
Yeah. And see, the Republicans, interestingly enough, are saying this is not a deal breaker. Lincoln Chafee, who we talked about yesterday, who a lot of people were looking at as
Senator from Rhode Island.
Senator from Rhode Island, he was possibly going to be the swing vote here. It looks now as though, although he was affected by Ford's testimony, he told reporters after the session yesterday that he is still inclined to vote for Bolton. And this is against Carl Ford, you know, even going further than the kiss up, kick down part. Let's hear another part of Ford's testimony.
People who abuse verbally my staff and take advantage of their power of being an undersecretary and go five or six levels below them in the bureaucracy and remount somebody just because it makes them feel better is professionally unacceptable to me.
So, like, since Bolton was in the State Department, here's some of his accomplishments. You know, he helped the U.S. pull out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty with Russia. He scuttled the protocol to the biological weapons ban, ousted the head of the organization that oversees the chemical weapons treaty, watered down an accord on small arms trafficking, and refused to submit the nuclear test ban treaty for Senate ratification. So it's pretty clear to me that this guy has made the world more dangerous. So the idea of him being the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations and what that really means, I don't see how it's a good thing at all.
Well, see, and at a certain level, Mark, no bad deed, or in Bush's case, good deed, goes unpunished. Think back to the 2000 election. Guess where John Bolton was about that time?
Could it be Florida?
Yes, he was in Florida.
James Baker, his old boss, pulled him in.
Pulled him into Florida. He rolled into one of those places where they were trying to count the votes. He said, I'm with the Bush-Cheney team, and I'm here to stop that count.
Oh, man.
That is John Bolton.
These guys, they never go away. They disappear. They go underground. They're stuck on a shelf somewhere. But this guy really hasn't been. And then they're pulled out and rewarded once it falls out of the public memory.
Yeah. And again, Lincoln Chafee, who faces a reelection bid next year, is at this point doing political calculus that says, hey, my people, my constituents in Rhode Island don't even know who the guy is, so they're not going to vote me out if I vote for him. Ironically enough, there's also word that there might be as many as two Democrats who will vote for him in the end. That could well be Bill Nelson and or Russell Feingold from Wisconsin.
Okay.
Amazing if it happens. Now, the vote may come Thursday, may come early next week, but we're going to be checking it out real close.
I hope we get surprised and he's not confirmed.
In the next hour, we got a rather large black man we're going to be talking to. Brother
Charlie. Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We're in the middle of it. I'd like to tell you people out there, some of you know, some of you listen to the show, we're going to do a dream interpretation in a little while, so get your it out and take a look at it, 866-303-2270. I'll share my dream with you in a few minutes, and then we'll take a crack at interpreting one of yours. But first, let's get into Tom DeLay a little bit. There was a secret, top secret meeting of the the neocon death cult legislative pig pack, which, you know, Tom DeLay is in the lower house, the dwarf, the bug-killing dwarf king of that body.
Yeah, this was the Senate Republicans. This was a lunch that they have, and this is, you know, a closed situation.
Yeah, whatever that means. It's like, okay, damage control. We're in trouble here. What are we going to do? You know, it's interesting to me that Rick Santorum is so without personality or charisma that he actually said a sort of negative thing about Tom DeLay, pushing Tom DeLay last week. He said that DeLay needs to, he has to come forward and lay out what he did and why he did it and let the people then judge for themselves. That's Rick Santorum on this week on ABC. That was on Sunday. All right, quote again. But from everything I've heard, again, from the comments and responding to those, is everything he's done was according to the law. Yeah, everything he's heard from Tom DeLay. But this was clearly a negative statement, which, because of Santorum's, you know, inexperience and lack of charisma, you know, DeLay tried to spin it right back at him and thanked him.
Oh, yeah. DeLay thanked him because he said he didn't break the law. But what DeLay is doing now is trying to give these Republican senators a set of talking points that the Republicans in the House, at least those who publicly back DeLay, already have in place. Okay, and that is a very simple talking point program. Blame the Democrats. If there's any negativity about Tom DeLay, shift the attention, shift the focus to the Democrats, and of course, the Democrat-controlled news media. I guess that's us.
That's hilarious. Have you watched the news media? It must be us. Because he apparently DeLay referred to this as a mammoth operation funded by Democratic supporters and designed to destroy him as a symbol of the Republican majority. God, I hope so. You know, I keep saying that, but I hope this is a mammoth operation. I really do, and I'm proud of our Democratic operators if that's really what's going on. If we are part of a mammoth operation, Riley, terrific. That means we're coming around.
Yeah, well, see, now, here's what I don't understand. DeLay is saying that ABC News twisted, or that the media twisted what Santorum said without ever asking, you know, if your thing is to blame the Democrats and blame the news media, why is Santorum even on ABC News?
Why would he even be talking to it? And
why would he be talking to the media that twists his comments?
And my big question is, if that's the case, you know, whether it's twisting or not, you know, basically Santorum said, quote, DeLay has to come forward and lay out what he did and why he did it and let the people then judge for themselves. If that's twisting of any kind, and he thinks that he's saying a good thing about him, Tom DeLay should come out and make a case. Come forward and tell us what you did. And then, you know, put yourself before a committee that you haven't fixed or rigged in your favor. You know, put a committee together, a bipartisan committee, Tom, and tell us what you did and let us ask you some questions.
Well, you know, one guy who was at that lunch who knows from this kind of problem is Trent Lott. Trent Lott, of course, was forced to step down as Senate Majority Leader 2 years ago after that hee-ha thing he did, those racist comments he made at a party for Strom Thurmond.
Yes.
So, you know, Lott says, quote, I hope he survives and I hope he will stay on the job and stay in there and do his job. The power of prayer is the only thing that will sustain you. That's what Trent Lott said.
That and a mediocre hairpiece.
There you go.
Those are the two things you got going. I think that DeLay might have his own hair. I don't know.
Well, you know, see, all of this is going to be, Trent Lott's going to come back to DeLay later on if he survives all this and say, look, I need your help. I need another military base in my state. It's the only jobs I can create.
Yeah. All right, so as you know, I write down my dreams every day, and I'm about to do my dream diary, but after that, we want to take calls from you about your dreams, which we will attempt to interpret. We do this occasionally, so give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270, but right now it's my turn. I'm sitting on a red velvet stool wearing a yellow bowler hat and holding a banana. All right? Oh, yeah, and I'm wearing a leash. A red velvet curtain opens and 200 vacant-eyed fat people sneer at me and tap the glass, even though the sign clearly says, please don't tap the glass. I hear a barker's voice. Come on, come all, step right up and gaze upon Mark, the lovable radio freak. All the way from the wilds of New Mexico, this bizarre man-diva will astound you. Watch him battle to the death with hostile email. Watch him perform an amazing facsimile of radio talk show with teases and hard outs. You'll swear it's real. Watch Mark alienate his own kind by being too funny. Watch Mark bash organized religion and their phony gods. You won't want to miss Mark as he self-destructs with liberal guilt. His heartbreaking meltdowns will move you to tears. And don't forget his diet. You will witness this weight-conscious wonder eat carrots and kale from a plastic container raw. Then watch him shove chocolate cake into his mouth as fast as he can eat it, if there's any sitting within arm's length. You will hear Mark plug as many appearances at comedy clubs nationwide as often as 3 times an hour. 5 minutes with Mark and you'll want to take him home. Come on, Mark, do a little dance for the nice people. So I get up and dance a little hornpipe and then hold out my yellow bowler. The fat people fill it with rocks and chew gum. So I throw my poop at them. I woke up and my bed was filled with bearded ladies. And that part was true. Not really. I'm kidding. That was a little bad joke.
Wait a minute, the bearded lady part or the throwing the poop part? Which part were you kidding
about?
You know,
I can't answer for my unconscious. Yeah, it's your turn. Give us a call at 866-303-2270. Tell us your dreams, and we will give it a shot at interpretation. Are we going with this one? Huh? Here we go. Ken?
All right.
Ken, what's your dream, Ken?
Hello.
How you doing?
Good morning.
Hey.
I got a call from a friend of mine that I never met before, but I knew her from the magazine. She's a model.
So it's a friend you've never met before, but yeah, she's a model. So you got a call from a model in a magazine.
Yeah, we were just talking on the phone, but finally I set up a date with her at my house.
Okay.
So we were talking on the phone, and I said, okay, let's eat at my home. I'm going to cook something special for you. So she agrees. So I'm eagerly anticipating this date, and I'm waiting for her. Looking out on my driveway in my mansion. I have a mansion.
Sure.
It's with 3 stories, and I'm looking at her on the 3rd floor from the bay window. And
okay.
My driveway is as long as Broadway in Manhattan.
Yeah.
But she doesn't pull up in a limousine. In fact, she just pulls up at my gate.
Yeah.
But she reaches from my gate to the front of my house.
Yeah.
A few steps.
Yeah.
So she has long legs.
Yeah.
And she's a model. She's wearing this Chinese dress, white collar, and Mandarin collar, and it flips at the side, and it's red, and it sets off her skin very well. She's
beautiful. All right.
She's black. Her name is Alec Weck, by the way.
It's what?
Alec Weck.
Okay.
She's a model.
Okay. So this is a real model.
Yeah, she's a real person.
Are you sure this isn't just a fantasy that you've got?
You know, you're starting to scare me where you're going here, Ken.
What happens, Ken?
No. So anyway, the strange thing is, I'm looking down at her from my mansion, and I'm seeing her from my vantage point, which is from the mansion and the long driveway.
Okay.
But I'm also seeing how she sees me by looking up at me when she reaches my front door, and what she's seeing a tenement four-story walk up. And it's not a driveway, but she just pulled up at the curb, you know, the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And so she shouts out at me again. She shouts up at me again. She says, did you cook? What did you cook? So I said, yes, I cooked. It tastes great. I tasted it already. It's something that I love. I know you're going to love it. Come on up. So I buzz her up.
Yeah.
And when she reaches the front door of my tenement house now in the apartment, I open the door. And it's not Alec, it's my cousin.
It's your cousin?
Wearing the same dress. And immediately upon entering, she says to me, okay, I don't want your food, I want Chinese food. Can you go downstairs and buy me some?
Oh, wow, this is complicated.
And I said, but I cooked. She says, okay, I want Chinese food. And I had to leave her in the apartment and go downstairs and buy Chinese food, and then I woke up.
Wow. All right, Ken, stay on the line. I'll take a crack at it. It's pretty complicated, and I think it's a little scary.
It sounds a little Jerry Springer-like to me.
15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
801-GAME. That's 1-800-801-GAME. Call now. 1-800-801-GAME.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We got Ken on the phone. He had a very exotic dream that he was in his mansion, on the 3rd floor of his mansion, and he had gotten a call from his a model who is his friend. He made a date. He invited her over for dinner, and he was going to cook for her, and she showed up. And then, you know, in some interesting switch, he saw his mansion from her point of view, and it turned out to be the tenement that he does live in. And then, you know, after all is said and done, you know, she comes and yells up, "Are you cooking?" And he said, "Yeah, I made something you like." And now he's back in his tenement, and, you know, she comes up to the door. It turns out to be his cousin,
yeah,
dressed in the same way. And
who wants Chinese.
A Mandarin outfit who wants Chinese food. And now I got a quick question. Did you eat Chinese food the night you had this dream?
No, I did not. I don't do that. I don't eat Chinese food.
You don't eat Chinese food?
No.
Wow. Why?
I don't like, I would eat it if I cook it myself in my home.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think that, you know, part of the thing, Ken, I think that the mansion is that, you know, I think that whole vision of it's something that you want. I think that, you know, you're at a point in your life that you're not really that content with, and that you really aspire to have bigger and better things. And I think that the whole cooking thing is that you really want someone to love you. You want to love somebody else. You want to provide for them and nurture them, and you know, and you've got this fantasy that has to do with this. This exotic woman and this exotic place. I mean, the Chinese outfit and is very exotic. And I think the idea that instead of, you know, this part that you're in your dream, there's a conflicting, you know, there's reality and dream, that you actually see your reality versus what you really want to have. And when your cousin comes up, I think your cousin sort of represents your family, and that it sort of represents something about your place in life and your family and who you really are that you're a little uncomfortable with. And it sort of brings it all back home to what your life really is. It was sort of a bummer, the dream, huh? That, you know, you had all these great. Very rarely do people actually check themselves in their dreams. You know,
yeah,
usually you just run with the. If I had the same dream, Ken, I would have
scored with the model.
Exactly, I would have had the follow through with the model. But, you know,
I want to meet her one day.
Okay, but does this sound like a reasonable interpretation?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay,
right,
Ken, take
you.
Care. It is interesting that he actually, that there's a moment of reflecting that he knew who he was in his dream, that he couldn't even keep up the illusion
of it being a model. It turned out to be his cousin.
Well, it's a nice segue, because there is a sort of exotic nature to, certainly to Asian attire and to the continent of China, because I don't know much about it. I've been there, and it's in the news today. There is an alignment occurring between the two most densely populated places
on
the world,
yes,
and it's on some level, economically speaking, if it unfolds in the wrong way, it is really the United States' biggest fear.
Yeah, it is. And to get a really clear idea about what we're talking about some agreements of some longstanding beefs between China and India. Now, to get an idea of the Chinese population, it is generally estimated at between 1.2 and 1.5 billion people. That is a margin of error that is the same as the total population of the United States, 300 million people.
Mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. And the Indians, of course, have another 1 billion people. Chinese labor force, 778.1 million people compared to the United States, 147.4 million people. They don't need automation nearly as much as we do. But one thing they do need to expand their continued manufacturing base and to get involved in this trade that is going to theoretically happen between China and India, they need oil. And that's going to be the sticking point between the United States and China over time, and later on with the Indians as well.
Especially because we're past pea production. Now the Chinese are taking a large part of the oil in the world, you know, right now.
Yes.
Now what event took place that, you know, that signaled the heralding of this relationship here?
Well, China's premier visited India, ended that visit yesterday. And they made progress around one thorny issue that has kept them apart for better than 40 years, and that is their common border, which stretches some 2,200 miles through the Himalayas. That border and skirmishes around that border and fights about the different settlements along that border, the,
uh-huh,
you know, who in fact had governance over these. It led to China and India to go to war in 1962. And there have been periodic skirmishes. Certainly the deal is not done yet, But once they get this border thing secure, once they get trade agreements in place, you are talking about the potential of an two extraordinary economies combining. Now, on the one hand, you have American jobs allegedly outsourced to India, and the flip side of the equation is the Chinese are sending, you know, huge amounts of their products right here to the United States.
Right.
So that is potentially a prescription for disaster for American workers if those trends continue.
Now, can you just tell me a little bit about how this affects the deficit? Do you understand this stuff?
All right. The trade deficit total is $61 billion. This is according to... this is according to the U.S. Census on April 12th. That was just yesterday.
Okay,
These are fresh numbers we got.
Very fresh.
All right, the trade deficit with China, $13.9 billion, and the trade deficit with India, $767 million. That is a total of just over $20 billion.
Wow.
in trade deficit between the United States, India, and China. And right now, China is now Japan's biggest trading partner, replacing the United States. Now, China has a ways to go to catch up with the United States in terms of gross domestic product. This is in 2004, $11.2 trillion to $6.9 trillion. India is $3.1 trillion. But Mark, this is really doing is showing that there are many regions in the world that are turning away from traditional models of how to do business, how to trade, and they're starting to look inward. It's happening in South America. It's happening to a lesser extent in Africa. And this agreement means it's happening in Asia. And this really has some very deep implications for the United States.
Yeah, I don't understand it all completely, but it seems that on some level, as an economic superpower, we are starting to sort of recede, and I think it's a pretty amazing thing that a communist country,
yeah,
you know, is now going to be one of the most efficient capitalist countries in the world. When we come back, maybe we'll play a little sound from Ted Fishman, the author of China Incorporated, on this very topic. He was on our show last week, and we're going to have Charles Barkley coming up, so keep listening, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
52 executions, which I believe are all interfering with the life cycle.
The Al Franken Show on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're talking about a meeting during which China's premier wound up, he was visiting the Indian Prime Minister Manmohan Singh Monday, and that was China's Wen Jiabao, I think.
Yes.
I don't really know, but apparently China's premier wound up the visit to India on Tuesday with a vow to make the world's fastest-growing economies, partners rather than rivals, and I quote, India and China are brothers, end quote, and then China's Wen Jiabao told reporters. He then asked if it was possible to meet the person who gave him tech support last week when he was having trouble installing software on his computer because he had a few more questions and didn't want to stay on the phone forever.
Now, you know what's going to be interesting?
Did I present that like it wasn't a joke? Did I read that too straight? I mean, did that just go right by you, Kayla? Just like it went right. It's like, oh, there's Mark's reporting.
There you go.
Do I have a delivery problem, or was it a bad joke? Maybe it was a bad joke. I'm not insecure about it, but I thought it was kind of funny, the idea that the Chinese prime leader saying, I want to meet my tech. You know, forget it. All right, go ahead. So now, China, with very little effort, apparently, can become the most powerful economic power in the world.
They can become the most powerful economic power in the world, and they can bring India right along with them. One of the things that came out of this meeting that people are not talking about is that China has backed India's bid for a seat on the UN Security Council. Not necessarily with veto power, but they want a seat. Why not? There's a billion of them. Why not have a seat on the UN Security Council, which, of course, now the question becomes, what would John Bolton as UN ambassador end up saying about something like that? Remember, he would be the one that would end up taking and articulating the U.S. position on giving India a seat on the UN Security Council. There's also the question of nukes, because both India and China have nuclear weapons.
And that's Bolton's belligerent specialty.
Yes, that is his belligerent specialty. What happens if the Chinese and the Indians get together and say, you know what, there's a policy of America's that we don't really like and we think it should change. And there's, let's see, how many of us are there? There are 2.5 billion of us, and there are 300 million of you.
Unbelievable.
What's up?
Yeah, let's listen to Ted Fishman, who was on our show last week. He's the author of China Incorporated. He appeared here, as many of you heard last week. We got a little piece of him saying, you know, what it would take for China to transcend.
The Chinese only need a per capita income, an average income for every Chinese person, one-fifth that of the Americans, in order to have the world's largest economy, because they're five times as big as we are. And if the Chinese have a per capita income equal to the people of Hong Kong or Singapore, they'll have an economy five times as big as ours.
And ours is going down the toilet now.
Yeah, I mean, ours slowly. Ours is just slowly kind of stagnating. And, you know, what these things, these kinds of agreements, Mark, which take place, by the way, out of the view of most Americans. Most Americans don't get to the part of the paper where they talk about agreements between China and India. But we are going to be profoundly impacted by these kinds of agreements and the idea that folks are deciding to trade with themselves rather than spending their time trading with the United States. And, you know, sooner or later, we are going to have to become different kinds of players in the world.
Well, that's a big question. That's a big question. What do we do on a workforce level? What do we do on a production level? What do we do on an industrial level? You know, wages aren't going up. And, you know, there's a lot of issues. We're going to get into it a little more later.
Yeah.
Just about, you know, how disastrous this economy's, you know, impact on American workers really is. Now, look, every week we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the five-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milfington.
Dateline, Jacksonville, Florida, named after a president widely known for two things, nearly turning this country into a dictatorship by ignoring the Supreme Court, and annexing Texas. You decide which is worse. This week, many of you may be surprised to learn the unholy neoconservative crusade against human thought has suffered an unexpected blow, an encouraging development, were it not for the fact that everything else is so depressing. Item 1, Stephen L. Johnson, acting administrator of the EPA and habitudinous stooge of the Bush administration. Under pressure from Democratic senators who threatened to block his confirmation as head of EPA, Johnson caved in faster than a cheap suitcase and announced that he will finally cancel a program studying the effects of pesticides on infants and babies. The project, called the Children's Environmental Exposure Research Study, or CHEERS, if you're an Orwellian lunatic, is sponsored by the American Chemistry Council, or ASS, if you pronounce your C's like S's, for exposing their children to 2 years of friendly household products like Raid and Combat Source Kill, Mata Cucarachas Grande. Low-income parents in Florida were generously compensated with a camcorder, a bib, and $970. Just the right amount of money to buy enough digital tape to record 24 months of hideous bodily mutations, and that special moment when their child's neocortex turns to goo and spurts out through their ears. Ah, cherished memories. Yes, a happy chemical industry, spotlessly sterile kitchens, and immaculate lawns covered with convulsing, vomiting children are the ingredients of George W. Bush's Environmental Protection Agency, his Xanadu. But did we really need to ensure the health and longevity of corporate America by spraying poor kids with ortho? Even if they are in Florida? Shameful. Distasteful. Mark,
yeah.
As a fan of chemical alternatives yourself, you must know that for about 10 years now, I've been spraying my entire body with lavender, sage, and flaxseed oils in order to deter parasites, Mexican dung beetles, and fungus growth on my kiwis. And it never worked. But that didn't mean we should have used babies as chemical guinea pigs. No wonder our children hate us. No wonder they're confused and dizzy and have bad headaches. And no wonder they're aphid-free. See, there are two sides to every story, folks, okay? It's not all gloom and doom. However, let's not forget, though we may have won this battle, Stephen L. Johnson, the man who approved of this noxious act, will almost certainly become head of the EPA, to which we here at Morning Sedition, a candy company, issue this sacred challenge. President Bush, bring it on. Show us your Johnson. And that's today's dispatch from
the War on Brains.
Wow.
Habitudinous, huh?
Yeah. Thank you.
Habitudinous.
Thank you, Mort. Everything going okay with you and your kiwis?
My kiwis have fungal growth on them.
Oh, boy. Are we a Tandy company? That's funny. I remember when I first... I think Tandy was actually one of the first times I learned about what a corporation was. When I first learned that Radio Shack was Tandy, I had no idea how that could possibly work. Isn't that weird? Maybe it's not weird, but I'm
just
telling.
It's an amazing, wonderful family of corporate America.
You all right? What do you got going today?
Well, I got to go back and clean up my cat vomit.
All right. Oh. Well, great. That sounds like a big day. Thanks for being here, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. This was the highlight.
Yeah. We'll see you next week. Take it easy, man.
Take care, man.
Okay.
So long.
Keep safe, Mr. Habitudinous.
What habitudinous? That's some heavy habitudinism.
Yeah,
hey,
I know.
So we got Charles Barkley coming up. That was fun.
That was really fun.
When we interviewed him a few days ago, and it was he's a big dude.
Yeah, he's a really he's the second biggest guy that I've ever seen on this premise.
But he's not just tall.
I know
he's a big cat, and I was nervous at first, but he got very candid. It's a great interview. I'm looking forward to hearing it again myself. So it's 43 past the hour. We'll hear that on the back side. Is that what it is? On the other side of this break, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Reverend Barry Lynn from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. You know, with George W. Bush in charge, the weather forecast calls for Armageddon. That's why I stay prepared by tuning in to Rapture Watch with Milf Cardinal Milfington on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Or a state variation. Call American Life, 1-866-492-2500. That's 1-866-492-2500.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Okay, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Charles Barkley was named one of the 50 greatest NBA players of all time. He won the NBA's Most Valuable Player Award in 1993 when he played for the Phoenix Suns. In 1992, he played for the U.S. Dream Team, which won the Olympic gold medal. Barkley was involved in controversy over the roughness of his play. He definitely struck me as a guy you don't want to piss off. Barkley is a studio analyst for TNT's Emmy Award-winning program Inside the NBA. And he was here when we talked to him about his new book, Who's Afraid of a Large Black Man? It features interviews on race relations in America with Bill Clinton, Samuel Jackson, a few other people, right, Riley?
Oh, yeah, Barack Obama, Morgan Freeman, Ice Cube, a whole bunch of folks.
And I think we were both surprised that, you know, after a certain point in the interview, you know, he kind of hung out and he got candid. It was
cool.
Yeah,
he got real candid.
So this is our interview with Charles Barkley.
Charles Barkley is with us. Good morning.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We're excited to have you here. I've got the book right in front of me, Who's Afraid of a Large Black Man? What is the theme of the book, basically?
Well, I just want to write a positive book on race. Race isn't the greatest cancer of my lifetime. And I just want to write a positive book. We got so many young black kids out there who are screwing their life up, killing themselves, having kids they can't afford. And I want to just write a positive book because race is like the great taboo in America. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I just want to write a positive book. And I was fortunate enough to have some great contacts.
Mm-hmm.
And the people I interviewed, I put that list up against anybody. I'm very happy with the book. And hopefully a lot of young kids, black, Hispanic kids, poor white kids, will read the book.
You know, one of the things I got from looking at the book is the idea that there really is no black monolith anymore. That black people have a diversity of thought about a number of issues, including race. Did you experience that in talking to people like as diverse as Barack Obama and, for example, and Morgan Freeman?
What I thought was that when I put the list together, I think the black people, Hispanic people, get a really bad rap of how they're portrayed on television and in movies and things like that. So that was the reason, you know, I got such a ride. But when I talked to Sam Jackson, Morgan Freeman, Ice Cube, I wanted to talk about how blacks are portrayed in movies. I talked to Ice Cube also because I think rap music, there's only two times that black people and white folks and Jewish people and everybody get together, is sports or entertainment. They don't ever spend a lot of quality time with each other, except if it's the rap music or has brought more white people to black culture, but also sports brings that together. I was impressed with everybody I talked to, and I want to make the book really fair. That's why I talked to a rabbi. I talked to George Lopez, representing Hispanics. And George was really funny because he agreed with me. You know, he said when he first got his show, he had like 10 white guys writing his show telling him how Hispanics are supposed to be.
Yeah.
And it was all the sort of BS, canned, this is how the Hispanics are supposed to be. And I actually have gotten offended at times. Because you think about it, the majority of the black people on television, they got to be goofy comedians. You know, it ain't like nobody say, let's do a nice black drama with great strong black guys and strong black women. It's like, no, they can't be funny and act a fool. They're not going to be on television. But it was interesting talking to everybody, getting their opinion.
You know, when you talk about how blacks are portrayed on television, what television executives will say is that when we do these kinds of dramas, when we do serious television, when, for example, Tim Reed did Frank's Place, which is now 20-some-odd years ago, strong, positive black male role models, people don't watch.
Well, that's because the biggest hypocrites in the world is the Nielsen ratings. Anybody who thinks they can tell you what people are listening to or watching, they're a fool. The whole system is so hypocritical and so full of it, that's the reason people don't get a fair estimate of what people are watching.
So the Nielsen system is rigged like the Ohio elections, kind of.
Yeah, kind of like the Ohio elections. You're exactly right.
Okay.
America's the greatest country in the world, but it's slanted. There's no way they know what everybody is watching, and there's no way they can tell you that. I'll give you a good example. When you saw Chris Rock hosting the Oscars, he did the little spoof that was really kind of like funny but true. That he was showing that black people don't watch the same movies as white people.
Yeah.
Hispanic people don't watch the same movies. And we don't watch, rich people and poor people don't watch the same things. So for them to go around and tell you who's watching what or who's listening to what is just bogus. They just ain't putting the, trust me, as a black man with a lot of money, you get a lot of freeloaders. And I ain't never met a person with a Nielsen box. You know, trust me, that's why if you're a black man with money, you inherit black people that you didn't know existed, and they ain't no black people got in the boxes.
You talked to Barack Obama, who's the product of an interracial relationship.
Yes.
You talked to Tiger Woods,
yes,
who himself is in an interracial relationship. And I'm curious about whether or not you got a lot of flack yourself for being married to a white woman. You hear many, many black women, when they talk about black athletes and entertainers, they get upset, they see red about black men who marry, of prominence, who marry white women. You've heard that before?
I heard it many times, but first of all, that's just stupid. Because first of all, let me tell you why it's stupid. Trust me, there are a lot more poor black men married to white women than rich celebrities. So the theory that once a black man makes it, he gets a white woman, that's just bogus. Trust me. I will bet my everything I got that there are more poor black men married to white women than the other way around.
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, from my own life experience.
Yeah. So that's just stupid. But as far as, man, I don't have to apologize for not being racist. You know, John Thompson, who's one of my heroes, somebody I really admire, he was talking one day, they were giving him a hard time about having a white agent. And he said something very profound. He says, I don't have to apologize because I'm not racist. And I look at that in the same way I look at any, people go out with whoever the hell they want to go out with. I shouldn't have to defend myself because I'm not racist. You know, I mean, it's just funny. When I hear that, I always start laughing. The theory that every successful black man is going to go out and marry a white woman, that's just stupid. Because there's hundreds of more regular poor black folks who are married to white women who don't have, they never said that to them. They only give the black jocks or the black entertainers who marry white women a hard time. So I ignore that theory altogether because it's ignorant.
That's my conversation with Mark Riley and Charles Barkley. So he just started to get, he's starting to open it up a little. That was great.
Well, you know, I knew that the interracial question would generate a little heat because a lot of guys get that.
Yeah.
All right. A lot of black guys who marry white women get it. O.J. Simpson got it. A lot of people did. And I knew that Barkley, because he doesn't pull any punches, was going to react, you know, viscerally to the idea that someone would step to him about something. And I'm sure they have. And I'm sure they regretted it.
Yeah, it was funny because we crossed that line where, you know, you asked him a couple questions and it just became like this different zone.
Yeah.
In terms of how candid he became.
Yeah, and by the way, candid enough so his, you know, because guys like Charles Barkley always come with people. You know what I'm saying? He's got a publicist or he's got this one. He doesn't need a bodyguard, thank goodness, as big as he is. But he comes with people. So now he's got his, you know, his publicist was sitting in there while we were doing the interview.
I know, and then in
remember
the next
when they
segment,
started squirming?
Yeah, well, in the next segment of the interview, which we'll play after the break, we talk about religion, politics, the possibility of a black president, and there were a couple moments because he came with two people, a woman and a man, and they're both sitting there smiling for a little while and nodding, and then there came that sort of like. They kind of started twitching a little bit.
The chair's a little uncomfortable.
I guess that because I guess they get nervous, you know, if these, I don't know what.
They get nervous because they think he's going to say something incendiary. That's why they get nervous.
But you would think that'd be a good thing.
That'd be a great thing. Look at Jose Canseco.
I never understand why these handlers come with people, and, you know, these publicists, and for any other reason just to go, okay, we got to go.
The car's downstairs. Yeah, I mean, that's usually what they do. And it's not to knock them. God love them all. They're the ones that arrange all. They're the handlers. They're the ones we got to talk to.
I dated a publicist once, my friend.
You dated a publicist?
Not a good death.
And you admitted it.
Well, no, it ended badly, and she tried to ruin my career.
Really?
Yeah, and I was getting people coming up to me like...
Later for Charles Barkley. I want to hear that story.
I had a manager come up to me and said, hey, man, I got the press release. Apparently, you're an hole. Yeah. Yeah.
We got more with Charles Barkley. Stay with us. Hear what Barkley said that made his publicist squirm when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour, it's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. How are you? We are in the middle of our interview with Charles Barkley that we did a couple of days ago. We just, in the last segment, we were talking a bit about interracial marriage, about his own relationship, about how people look at that. And in this one, in this segment, we're going to be talking a bit about religion and politics. We're going to rejoin the interview right now, and I was just asking him about Barack Obama. And asking Charles Barkley, you know, what he thought of him as a political leader.
Do you think he could be president?
I don't think a black man can be president. I think
ever.
Not while. I mean, you look like you're about 62, so not. You only got a couple more years.
Really? Yeah. I mean, something must have happened since this morning.
You look good for your age. You know, racism is always there.
Right.
It's always there. If you watch television every day, you read the newspaper every day, there's some type of racial incident that happens. So it always comes into play.
But in the same way that you're saying that the Nielsen ratings don't represent the black community because there aren't black people that have these boxes, that maybe the unspoken voice of the black community could eventually, you know, transcend the racism in this country. You don't believe that to be true?
No, I don't think. I think it's been too ingrained in our psyche. And you think about this. One of the things we talk about in the book, America was built on racism. But also, when you look at one of the reasons I interviewed Sam Jackson, Morgan Freeman, Ice Cube, all the bad guys, we always had the stereotypes. And the bad guys used to be the Indians. The bad guys were the black guys. Now they're the Muslims. You know, they portray Jewish people in a bad, negative light at times. And the Hispanics, they're just like blacks. They get portrayed in a negative light. So racism is always there, and it's perpetuated, number one, through history, but also by the way it's shown on television. you know, the racial stereotypes. I mean, we can't do great television. You know, we're the drug dealers, we're the crooks, we're the killers. So racism is always right there. It's probably just covered up better. I don't even think there'll ever be a woman president, to be honest with you, because we have sexism in this country.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm just saying, like, in the context of the book, there has to be some hope. What are your hopes in terms of addressing the issue of race in a proactive way?
I think what happens in America, people are afraid to talk about race until something bad happens, and then it's too late. I want to write a positive book and start a dialogue, because first of all these people, I had never met anybody. I had met Sam Jackson before. Tiger's my boy, so I'd met him many times before. But all those other people were like, yeah, racism does exist, and it's prevalent in this country. So this, it's not like it's no secret.
Let me just say who those other people are for our audience. In the book, you talk to Bill Clinton. You talk to Jesse Jackson, Peter Guber, the film producer. Ice Cube, as you said, Rabbi Stephen Letter.
Yes.
Letter? It's interesting. You really have covered the gamut of types of people.
Well, because I wanted to make a fair book. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Number one, I wanted this to be a positive book to start positive discussion on race. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because, you know, having an interracial daughter, I want her to understand some of the trials and tribulations that she's going to come up with through history. And I want her to also just be a, you know, like I don't want you. Sometimes when I watch television, the way they portray black people makes you embarrassed and not want to be black. Mm. And I don't ever want her to ever have to worry about. I say, I want you to be a strong black woman, not that crap you see. They think if you braid your hair and you wear a throwback jersey, that makes you black now when you're watching television. It's frustrating to watch how we are portrayed.
You grew up in the South.
Yes. Which is far and away the worst.
Yeah, during the height of the civil rights movement, not long after you were born, in fact, the four young girls were blown up in the 16th Street Baptist Church. Yet you've always been a very assertive individual, coming from a region where blacks being assertive sometimes could get you killed. How did you manage to negotiate that?
You know, it's really weird. That's a great question, but it's really weird to thinking that right when I was born, they're blowing up churches, they're shooting guys with water, and she's sicking dogs on them at the march in Selma. But one thing my mother and grandma said, you need to learn about this when you grow up. They made a conscious effort that you need to know where you came from so you can go forward. But one thing they always instilled upon me, man, there were a lot of great white people battling with those black folks. So they made sure, number one, that I was not racist. They say, hey, those people over there, they're ignorant. But I want you to always notice when you see these people getting shot with water and these dogs and getting beat with billy clubs, there are a lot of great white people are marching with them. And they just said, hey, just be a strong man. You're not right all the time. If black people are wrong, tell them they're wrong. All black people ain't always right. You know? And I think that's one thing we got to come to grips with in the black community. We got to do better. I agree with 110% what Bill Cosby said. We got to do better. And we got to start holding each other to a higher standard. And one thing that Jesse Jackson talked about in the book, we dropped the ball. Because this is realistically, no matter all the problems we got, this is the greatest time for black people ever. And for us to be out there like damn fools, killing each other, for no reason, having kids we can't afford is a travesty.
Your name has been connected with a possible run for political office. You still thinking about it?
What I want to do, number one, yes, I think about it. What I want to do is get on the radio and TV like I am right now and tell these black kids, poor white kids, Hispanic kids, they can do great things. We don't know what we can do until we push ourselves. But you got to put the effort in, the time in. You got to get your education. The problem I have with politics, they're full of it. You got these idiots. If I never hear the word Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative again, because that only benefits a certain group of people in life. The majority of people in this country don't benefit from being liberal or conservative. To me, that's just like a catchphrase to get you involved with a certain group so you can really discriminate against another group.
Or get a job on the radio.
But you know what?
We benefit from being liberal.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm so disgusted in the political system right now because I'm a liberal. I'm an independent. If I had to choose a party, I voted for John Kerry because I think I don't like using words like right wing or conservative because they're so discriminatory as far as their practices, and they've taken religion to the point where I'm really not feeling religion at all right now, because with the way I grew up as a Southern Baptist, religion meant compassion, inclusion for your fellow people and your fellow man, but now it is such a bad word in my eyes, and it's just my opinion, and it's just unfortunate where the country has went right now.
Absolutely. You talked to Bill Clinton, and he's one of the great politicians. You can definitely say that about him. What kind of impact did he have on you? What do you have to say that blew your mind or not?
But you know, what's funny. You know, people they always want to know what everybody was like.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about Bill Clinton,
mm-hmm.
you can say to yourself, whether you like him or not, you can say to yourself, man, he'd be fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
And I don't normally get excited to meet people, but I was excited to meet him.
Uh-huh.
And it's two really profound things in the book. When he talks about, he says, listen, you might come from a bad neighborhood, you might go to a bad school, you might have a bad mom and dad, but you've got to find a way to be successful. Because there are a lot of kids out there who are in poverty, who that's their life. But they've got to find a way to be successful. And the second thing that was very important, what Jesse Jackson said, he says, you know, a lot of these young black folks have dropped the ball because there are a lot of people who did, quote unquote, a lot of heavy lifting
mm-hmm.
to put me in a situation where I can be successful. And for me to go out there, do drugs, kill myself and kill other black folks, or have kids I can't afford, I'm dropping the ball and I'm doing a disservice to my heritage. But to get back to your point, man, Bill Clinton, it was everything I thought it was going to be. And that was really one of the highlights for me.
It seems to me that some of the message that I'm getting from you, and also the talking about Jesse Jackson and Bill Clinton, is that there's a way to transcend almost any hatred or racism, with hope and not accepting the role of the victim in the culture.
You can't accept the role of the victim
mm-hmm.
because realistically, you're not a victim.
Right.
People who grew up and my mother's and grandmother's age, they're victims. Because realistically, this is the greatest time ever for black people. If you look at it from for chances, from economics and things like that. But we have become our own worst enemy.
Okay.
And that's the problem I have.
Well, thank you. It's been great talking to Charles Barkley. The book is Who's Afraid of a Large Black Man? It's got a lot of great stuff in it and a lot of great people that Charles talked to. Appreciate you being here.
Hey, no, thank you for having me. Keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot.
We need more of you guys.
All right. Thank you very much.
So that was our interview with Charles. I'm going to stop saying I'm going to stop it. I'm punctuating things with it. I heard it in the interview. I know that I'm doing it, and I will make a concerted effort to, stop doing it, Because I don't want people to, I'm introducing myself to the pattern. See, the point where the publicist got squirmy was when he started talking about the right wing.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, that was it. I hope the publicist knew where we were. I don't know why the publicist would get nervous about talking bad about the right or saying that he didn't have a lot, he wasn't feeling religion either.
I don't know. I think a lot of them are just trying to not have them say anything that could be controversial to anybody so that guarantees that the book will sell to everybody possible.
Yeah.
I think that's their only concern. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about how the Republicans are trying to legislate denying veterans health care, people who come back injured from this war, from other wars. It's within this new budget, this new military budget, that they want to deny, out and out, and they're proud of it, deny veterans health care. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
This is the Wake Up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Absolutely free. Even the phone call is free. Call 877-757-2668. That's 877-757-2668. Call right now.
K-100.
22 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So thank God we got this machine, this iNews 5000, this Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From The Guardian. In Britain, Republicans start campaign to keep Hillary out of the White House. Feed that in there. Republicans start campaign to keep Hillary out of the White House. Translation, 20-year-old story finally hits British newspaper. From Fox News, silicone implants ban upheld. Throw that in there. Silicone implants ban upheld. Translation is judges remain supple. But firm. From the Associated Press, whale takes wrong turn, ends up in New Jersey. Whale takes wrong turn, ends up in New Jersey. Translation, giant sea mammal blames poor signage near Holland Tunnel. How do you like that? Can I just hear this thing? Do you remember when we had Reverend James Forbes on the show? This
sure.
Is coming out of Barclay, of Charles Barclay, talking about values. I just want to hear this. He's from the Riverside Church up in Harlem, and we haven't heard this in a while.
We better go into our values. And I don't mean two values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the broad values upon which this nation was built. And that includes care for those who can't care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It means productivity based on regulations that are fair for all of the people. It is based on a global vision that we are the global leaders. What is our vision for the globe, and how do we manifest that in our own nation? And we're going to be discussing how do religious values stop destroying folks and actually build up community and get us ready for the mission that is ahead.
I hope that one day we get back to some of those principles, because now, you know, stop with the nose. Let's talk about fiscal irresponsibility. All right, the one reason that people vote for Republicans, you know, in historically, is that they think they're better with money. Well, I could tell you, Riley, I'm looking at some of this paper, some of this newspaper stories. This administration is throwing this country in the crapper. The economy's in the crapper. Now they're trying to pass a military budget here, and they want to deny veterans $2 billion, and they're proud of it.
Yeah, I know. That's the amazing thing. They said no. 54 to 46, it was almost exclusively along party lines. And this is for direct health care funding, because there have been claims made by, you know, some credible people that the Veterans Affairs hospitals are in crisis all over the country.
Now, what is an emergency spending bill, Riley? Because this proposal was part of an $80.6 billion emergency spending bill for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and other military costs. Now, you would think that this would be part of that.
Well, it is. I mean, technically, this is part of the initial allocation that Bush asked for, which was $82 billion. The House approved $81.4 billion. And now the Senate is looking at an $80.6 billion spending bill. So maybe the difference between the $82 that Bush wanted and the $80.6 that the Senate is considering is, in fact, that health care money, although it doesn't exactly fit mathematically. The bottom line here is that the Republicans are saying that these veterans don't need better health care facilities.
Isn't that unbelievable? And now also, in this emergency spending bill, is that there's so much pork in it, right? That James Carafano, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, said, quote unquote, "It's just horrifying." Quote, "It's only a couple of million here and a couple of million there, but it takes a couple of million to buy body armor for our troops, and we didn't do it because we couldn't afford it," end quote. So much pork, so many of these guys trying to pull money out of it for their own little need.
For their own district so they can get reelected. And remember, Mark, that this money that Bush has asked for is not part of his budget allocation. This money is separate and distinct. So when Bush talks about how much the budget is, this isn't part of it.
And now inflation has outpaced the rise in salaries. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable with the legislation they're trying to push through between bankruptcy legislation and, you know, restricting victims' rights through tort reform, the Social Security program they're trying to push through. Fiscally responsible conservatives, what are you kidding me? How is this affecting your life? 866-303-2270. Are you finally starting to feel the crunch of Bush's economic policies? I'd like to hear from some Republicans, too, who thought that the conservatives represent fiscal responsibility. This is a disaster that's going to take this country years to get out of. Are you kidding with the trade deficit where it is as well? It's pathetic. 866-303-2270. Let us know how you're doing in this economy.
Better or worse? The choice is yours. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Edition on Air America Radio.
I'm selling, underwear on Orchard Street in the middle of August all day. You know, hey!
Randy Rose on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour, taking calls at 866-303-2270. How are you doing in this fiscally irresponsible Republican era? Who do you got there, Chris?
Yeah, Mark, this is a little weird. We have you on line one.
Hello?
Hey, buddy, what's up?
Dude, I'm calling from 50 years in the future.
That's possible? Well, cool.
I knew you wouldn't be freaked out about this, man. I mean, you're a visionary.
Well, hey, thanks, man. I never get that. So tell me, how did this happen?
Well, look, time travel, it's hard to explain, so let me simplify it. You know how you get 5 bars on your cell phone? Well, this is the 6th bar, and that's actually all I can tell you without messing up the time-space continuum thing.
All right, well, I'm good with that. That's cool. So let me ask you, future Mark, should I call you that? That seems like the right thing to call you. What's going on, man?
All right, well, this is weird. You know how they said the price of gasoline would go up a penny a day for, like, forever?
Yeah.
It did. Straight on through the fuel riots of 2020, and now a gallon of gas costs about $182.
I knew it. God, that's ridiculous.
Well, not really. Not really, if you think about it. Movie tickets are around $300, but you got to factor in everyone makes about $500K a year now.
Wow. Do we?
Look, we'll talk about that off air. But the gas thing, people give it to each other as gifts, man. Married couples register at Texaco. People leave their gas tanks to their grandkids in their wills. It's like diamonds used to be before we learned how to make them out of meat.
What?
Never mind. The point is, gas is very valuable.
So, hey, future Mark, hey, buddy, you're breaking up here. What, they haven't fixed cell phone reception yet?
Well, one, the phone is implanted directly into my inner ear. And two, since the comet hit, the planet slips off its axis every couple of hours. So there's a big shift, some tidal waves and stuff. Everybody grabs onto something. A couple of species drop out. And women are in a constant state of menstruation. So that part kind of sucks. But you get used to it. All right, see? There. It stopped.
All right. So, okay. So now the important stuff. What do I look like 50 years from now?
Well, the good news is the stretch pants are very slim. I'm just busting your hump, man. Look, we look the same, buddy. Everyone looks great in the future. I had a date with a 73-year-old last night. Smoking hot. Chicks not aging really opens up the whole playing field.
Whoa. Back up. I'm not married anymore.
Oh, yeah, you're married, but you're not dead, buddy. Don't worry, man. After the whole AIDS thing got cured, the whole monogamy thing was like, you know, what's the point? And, you know, when scientists disproved the Bible, all that went out the window. Well, listen, there's a reason I called. I don't want to freak you out, but, how do I say this? Don't start building an ark, but start thinking about how you would build one, you know? And just kick it around. Look into the materials you'd need, you know. You get what I'm saying.
All right, buddy. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll Google it.
Perfect. Look, I gotta go. My sex bots are done wrestling, and that's where I come in. I'll talk to you later, buddy.
Okay. Talk to you later. That was a weird experience.
You know, you really haven't changed much in 50 years. That's all I can say.
Maybe we'll get more from him on just exactly what's happened since then. So let's take some calls about how people are doing, given that we just heard from the future. DJ Kung Fu listening in New York City. What's up?
Hey. How you doing?
Hello.
Hey, what's going on? You better off, you worse off?
Well, I'm better off only because I do commercials for a living, and there's tons of drug commercial work out there, and it's really disgusting.
So you're doing...
It's heartbreaking.
You're doing commercials for drug companies, so you're better off, but you're having a hard time living with yourself, or not?
Yeah, but I drive a hybrid. I've called before and spoken about that. I drive a Prius, and I do that kind of stuff. But this is very depressing.
Hey, is it true what they say about them, that they don't get good gas mileage in cold weather or something?
It goes down a little bit, but I'm averaging close to 47 miles over the last 2,000 miles.
Wow,
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. So listen, there's something you guys got to tell your audience.
Okay.
There's an army of listeners out there that are passionate. Each one of them needs to go out and get two people to listen to Air America.
Okay.
That's how you're going to change things, man. That's how you're going to make it better. So do that for me. I guess I just did it. So
well, how many people? Will you tell a couple new people, too?
I'm Tom Cosley.
Oh, okay. Thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
Day and night.
All right, DJ. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
DJ Kung Fu. Well, it's interesting because I went to the real estate agent yesterday because I was looking into an apartment, the apartment next door, because I want Jim, our buddy Jim, who works here on the show, to move in. And they asked me how the radio show is going. How's the job going? And I literally, these people working in real estate office, who I like, they're very nice people. They've been nothing but good for me, good to me. And I wasn't trying to insinuate anything about them, but I said, well, look, you know, I leave work and I don't feel ashamed. And that counts for something. I mean, think about how many jobs you've had in your life where you feel ashamed. You know, and this guy's got the
situation. I can't talk about that.
Well, a lot of people rationalize because they're like, hey, you got to do what you got to do. I found out yesterday that that Verizon supports Tom DeLay. And I, you know. And
what?
And we got no choice. But
oh, yes,
Verizon.
You do.
Well, what am I going to do in this town?
Hello, T-Mobile.
Okay.
Hello, Singular.
But what about the HomeWire? The HomeWire is Verizon no matter what in New York.
No, it isn't.
You sure? I thought they owned all the lines.
Hi, IDT?
Okay.
No, man.
It's just interesting. When you find out stuff, there's always something you can be that's hypocritical about your disposition.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. We consume. We can't help ourselves.
You don't know. Roy, listen, in Miami, you better off or worse off?
What's up, Roy?
Worse off. Hi, this is Roy. I'm in Miami.
Okay.
I'm a disgruntled Republican.
Okay.
A disgruntled Republican? I thought there weren't any of you.
Oh, we're out here. I'm new to hearing your show, and I appreciate your voice, guys. You make me think about all the junk that's going out there in the Republican Party. But my main focus is the gas prices.
Yeah.
To me, they're out of control. I don't know why the media or any groups have not broken down who and why the gas prices are so high. My feeling is, and maybe you guys can even promote this, why don't we have a national no-buy gas day? That everybody in this country doesn't buy gas for one day. I think that would probably send a message to these greedy oil people and stop the prices from going up.
You know what's sad, Roy? They'll sell it all to the Chinese. I mean, the bottom line here is that there is a worldwide demand for oil that is skyrocketing. And the reason why gas prices continue to go up is, A, the price is manipulated. The price of oil is manipulated by OPEC and the oil-producing countries. But the other side of it is worldwide demand continues to spiral.
I think what we need to do, Roy, thanks for your call, by the way, is that, you know, what we need to do is thinking about alternative fuel sources. We need to start thinking about, you know, broadening public transportation.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many other solutions that are going to have to be met anyways. Why doesn't some research and some money and people get together around that stuff? I mean, on some level, rising gas prices might be good for, in some ways, maybe more people are taking public transportation if they can, and maybe more environmental repercussions are being lessened a little bit.
A little bit. They are, little by little. I mean, even the fact that the Prius has become a chic thing for people to drive. But until we get to transporter beams, so we don't really have to, you know, get in cars to go places, we are still at the mercy of fossil fuels unless there is some serious money put into research and development. Right now, the hybrid technology works as far as, you know, the combination gas, electric cars. The problem is when you start getting into all electric stuff, the equation, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, but I think he's absolutely right in tracing this directly to the Bush administration and directly to what's going on in this economy. Let's talk to Thomas. Thomas, are you better off or worse off, Thomas?
Hey, Thomas.
I'm actually worse off.
Uh-huh. What's going on with you?
I'm a veteran of the recent Iraqi Freedom Festival.
Yeah.
And I was paralyzed from the chest down.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's not your fault.
No, but, I mean, look, you know, people that serve their – I've always had respect for people that serve their country. I may not be down with war, but I understand, you know, people serve their country, and they're injured in service of their country, and they deserve to be treated like, you know, good people.
How are you being treated, Thomas?
I'm actually being treated okay because I've got groups that are set up to fight for me within the VA. But my problem is I'm in an interesting group because I was paralyzed in the Iraq War. I'm now the same moral conviction that forces our president to try to unite the world under one God also will not allow him that freedom to look into stem cell research.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So I can go fight for him and possibly potentially die for a president, but that same president won't help me try to walk again.
Wow, that's deep. I never thought of it that way.
And the hospital, are you guys, are they, how's the treatment there within the hospital?
Well, personally, the VA, I where I'm from, Kansas City, Missouri, is so just horribly understaffed is that they couldn't fully deal with the problems of just the veterans they had before this thing happened.
Right. You know, well, they just, the Republicans have voted to not to deny the veterans hospitals $2 billion because they say that everything's working efficiently.
Right. When I heard that yesterday on the Air America, I was watching the president give a speech at where I used to be stationed, Fort Hood, and right at the same time that I heard the Republicans shot down the amendment, the president was saying that, and to all those who came back and are seriously injured or crippled, we will do everything within our power to make sure you get the best medical care possible. And it bothers me that the only place that that was even made at all noteworthy was on liberal radio. And I searched for the whole rest of the day on MSNBC. I knew it wasn't going to be on Fox News, but CNN and all those places, and it's nowhere anywhere on there.
Well, I'm glad we're putting it out there, I'm sorry for what you've gone through, but I really appreciate your call, Thomas.
Well, thank you for doing what you all are doing. I'm excited there's this voice now.
Okay, all right, man. Thanks, Thomas.
That's a deep call. You know, he's absolutely right. The hypocrisy in this administration is mind-blowing. And his approval rating is so damn low, 45%, the lowest in the history of second-term presidents. And most people now, according to polls, think that the war, they know that he lied, and they're mad at him, and they think that the reason we went into war was invalid and it was a lie. That's 50% of the people. So I'm happy to know that around half of the country, if not a little more, don't like this guy. He doesn't represent him. He's the worst president ever to them. And all he does is he preaches this false reality to the people that believe him. It's really creepy.
But, you know, that's the thing that is so disconcerting. Can you imagine being a paralyzed veteran sitting up and hearing about allocations being cut, denying $2 billion, and having your president on TV at the same time saying we're going to do everything we can for you?
Hey, Don in San Diego. Can you hold on just a second? We'll be back with your call. We're going to talk to another vet who's got some more to say about the VA situation. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition on the air and online. MorningTradition.com, Air America Radio.
978-800-603-9978, 800-603-9978.
Let's put this thing down. It's 50 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yep.
This morning's edition on Air America Radio. I will be performing in Cincinnati at Go Bananas. That's Friday and Saturday, May 6th and 7th. So everybody listening to 1530 WCKY, the revolution of talk radio, come on down. You can go to that website, I think it's WCKY.com. I better double check that, but I will be in Cincinnati the 6th and 7th of May.
Yeah.
Now, we're taking calls about whether people are better off or worse off. We're also hearing from veterans about the proposal or the emergency bill that denies $2 billion to the veterans' hospitals. Don in San Diego, how are you? Are we there? Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Don. How you doing?
Okay, I just wanted to point out how they stacked the deck.
Okay.
As usual, they've been doing that since the beginning of this country. But on this veterans thing, I watched it on C-SPAN, the hearings, and what they did is they appointed a Republican to the head of the Veterans Administration. Then they got him to write a letter which they read into the record, saying that they didn't need any money in the VA hospitals. But these Democratic senators had gone around to the VA hospitals and started looking and realized that there was a lot of duct tape and everything used to hold the VA hospitals together. But they had intimidated the people in the VA hospitals into not saying anything because they, you know, they wanted to keep their lies straight.
Now you're a vet yourself, Don?
I'm a Korean War veteran, and I pay close attention to these things. And so what they're doing is they're intimidating and pointing to people to say that the things that they want to hear, and then these right wing Republicans vote against the interests of the veterans and say that the veterans didn't need the money while they've got all this pork in there. In this thing, and the president asked for X amount of money, but most of it is pork going to all kinds of things that were not right in the first place.
It's a crime. It's horrible.
And I wanted to thank you for running the thing with Charles Barkley. But you know, the thing is, the only thing I disagreed with about that Barkley said that he was in an interracial marriage, but then he said that his child was an interracial child. Well, that's, you know, words mean something. The point is that I happen to be a biracial person. That his child is a biracial person, and he's an interracial marriage means a marriage between a white and a black, or one race and another race. But a biracial person is a person who is a product of that, and we've got lots of biracial people in this country that are not recognized being biracial.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, and clearing up some language.
You know, I'm looking around on the Internet, Mark, and I'm seeing that, you know, in addition to veterans hospitals being understaffed, a tremendous number of them have closed. Do you know that 56 hospitals, VA hospitals, closed in California alone?
Where are they going to start putting these people? Where are they going to start shipping these vets that come back sick or hurt or need therapy ongoing? Unbelievable. We got someone here who's...
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Okay. It was 56 hospitals total, not just vets hospitals.
Oh, okay. So that's different.
That's different.
Steven, how are you in Florida? What's going on, Steven?
Good show. My wife worked in the VA for about 20 years now, and it's this starve it to death mentality. She's a primary care physician.
Uh-huh.
She'll refer people to oncology or another place, and they won't see them for a year or so. And
oh, my God.
If they have a chronic problem, they just can't get in to be seen.
So they die?
Well, they get their cancers don't get treated promptly. They get metastasized, and then they die. And then they're not treatable. Or if they're diabetic, they end up having amputations because they're not seen in a timely fashion.
Oh, my God. You know, I really believe that this administration, more than any other, is really have this sort of adapt or die policy for anybody that, you know, isn't a millionaire.
Well, yeah, it's depressing. It's not only the physicians who are overloaded and the primary care people, but it's the staff. You know, they have these people. A lot of times vets are homeless, especially in Florida. And the only way they can get to them is if they mail them a little card to remind them of their appointment. But a lot of these people are moving around, and they don't have the same address, and there's just no outreach. So you have clerical people who are overworked, and she can't even see your healthy people more than once a year if they need it. Schedule in a health, you know, a regular checkup is next to impossible. So it's like a year and 6 months.
Unbelievable.
Gets it turned around, and it's just the whole system is like someone sitting on the wheel, and it's just grinding so slow that a lot of problems which could be treated turn chronic and really have a lot of problems.
Well, thanks for your call, Stephen.
Sure.
See, that's just mind-blowing because that happens, like, you know, on a voluntary level with regular health care, Mark, because so many people are uninsured, and it comes out of their pocket if they just want to go see a doctor, all right, in this country. People put off addressing problems. And I've known people that have done that. Hey, it'll go away. You know, I'm going to give it a couple weeks.
Yeah.
They don't have that time. And these guys, these poor guys that, you know, that come back from the war or have a cancer problem, they're put on hold for a year because they're understaffed intentionally?
Yeah, they are. And it's that whole starve the beast mentality that we see in so many other areas of American life. And they're doing it to people who have served their country, for God's sake.
Adapt or die. That's what these guys are about. It's horrendous. We should be taking care of people. Wow, we're the most advanced country in the world. Let's end on an upbeat note. Here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand Compound. One, start preparing the anti-Hillary ads now. It's going to be a long race, people. 2004 was nothing.
Two, if anyone remarks that Britney Spears is pregnant, cock your eyebrow disdainfully and say, who? Britney who? Three, for your book club, read aloud from Jane Fonda's My Life So Far and have everyone dress up as their favorite Fonda. Aerobics Jane, Hanoi Jane, Mrs. Ted Turner Jane, Clute Jane, Barbarella Jane, on, and on. Four, throw a kegger to support Anheuser-Busch's courageous stand against genetically modified rice or to denounce them. Either one works. Five, today's phrase, just drop this into conversation. So they busted three terrorists for plotting against our financial institutions. I got three more for you. Ken Lay, Tom G. Lay, and Neil Bush. Wake up, sheeple. They're in your back seat right now. Wow, Riley, tomorrow I think we're going to talk to Ted Kennedy.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's going to be a lot of fun. We got a lot of stuff for you tomorrow. We got some great guests, some great funny.
Yeah.
To see his Michael
Isikoff from Newsweek.
Michael Isikoff from Newsweek. He wrote a dynamite article this week. Great stuff. Great show today, Maren.
You too,
see
man.
You tomorrow, Air America Radio.